Or at least I'm supposed to be. It's coming through okay? I was going to ask you guys back there before I started. You do not have this. This is just record, just audio. It's not video, right? What's that? It's just audio? Awesome. Thank you. Well, I had a little bit of a different direction I thought about going this morning for a bit of a message, but since I found out that it's a little bit of a missions emphasis here, I thought I am going to share with you a little bit about what is going on in the church in the Middle East. I was so encouraged here to hear some of the young people talk about their time in India and their time over there in Sudan. Was that North or South Sudan? You were in North Sudan, and the refugees are coming out of the South. Okay. So is there anybody coming from any of the other countries around there, or is it primarily Sudanese? Okay. Very interesting, and very blessed, by the way, to hear you being involved in those kind of places. Now, for whatever reason, I'm assuming most of you here have heard of Voice of the Martyrs, and occasionally have them come around and talk or whatever. Well, they came to Pennsylvania a number of years ago. One of the guys came there, given a talk for Voice of the Martyrs, and he was with a thing called Ananias House. And Ananias House is a Syrian-based thing, and they're working in Lebanon and Syria and Turkey, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Egypt, Sudan, Algeria. Kind of a lot of the hot spots they are working in right now, and they're primarily just come along church side of churches and tried to give them things that they need. Well, anyway, I won't go through a long story there about it, but they had one of the men from our church go along over, and he came back and gave a report about it, and I went and talked to him and said, next time I'm going along. So I've been over there a couple times with them, and what's happening over there right now is just absolutely amazing. And I want to start out with this story right here. This man right here is 75 years old, or 73 years old. He is, I'm standing there with him. He's got a United States passport. And Al Jazeera Television, which is the biggest television station in the Middle East, put his face on the television and said if anybody finds him, they should kill him. So he's sitting with us in Lebanon, in the country of Lebanon, and he's turning around and heading back into Syria, which is a total war zone. And I'm asking him, you've got a United States passport. Are you going home with us? And he said, no. No, I'm going back to my people. And I said, your people are trying to kill you. And he said, I know. But son, you have to understand, I've been preaching the gospel since I was 15 years old. And all of my life, people didn't listen. But he said, in the last 4 years, there are so many people turning to Christ in Syria. There is absolutely no way for us to keep track of it or keep up with it. And there is no way I'm turning my back on my people in the middle of that. And I said, they're trying to kill you. And he smiled and said, we are all going to die. We're all going to die. It's only tragic if we never live. Amen? And he turned around and went back into Syria. The Bible says, remember them that are in bonds as bound with them, and them which suffer adversity as being yourselves in the body. And I was, this kind of a map of the Middle East, of course, and a lot of the hot spots right now are here in the Middle East. You can see that little purple place right there is the country of Lebanon. That's where we went. Syria, of course, is this brown thing here. And this is kind of most of the people live over here along this side of the country. Up there where that circle is what would be known otherwise as Kurdistan. That's where all the Kurds are, if you hear people talking about the Kurdish people. We came in here to right above Beirut, Lebanon, is where we were at. Syria is an interesting place. In 2008, it had a population of just over 20 million. To compare, Ohio has a population of 11 million. It's about twice the size, not quite twice the size of Ohio, 71,000 miles as opposed to 44,000 square miles in Ohio. And the economy was expanding extremely fast, and the United Nations listed Syria as the safest place in the Middle East. This is 2008. Today, it looks like this. And it has caused that war zone, and the things that happened there have caused the greatest humanitarian crisis in terms of numbers that we've had in history. Like it was worse than World War II, as far as the amount of people displaced. So that's kind of a little bit of a picture of an overview of what's going on in Syria. They had called it the safest place in the Middle East, which of course it isn't now. But Jesus, when he was talking about this kind of thing, said unto them, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it. For what is a man advantage if he gain the whole world and lose himself or be cast away? For whosoever shall be ashamed of me and of my words, of him shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he shall come in his own glory and his Father's and his holy angels. We went over there to Syria, the first place that we, or to Lebanon, the first place that we went was to a church like this in the city of Beirut. And we were there. It's kind of, you can kind of see that a lot of the people are still dressed as Muslims. The women, you couldn't tell them from a Muslim woman on the street. Many of the people in there are still trying to figure out what this whole Christianity thing means. So most of them have been born again, but not necessarily all of them. It's a fascinating scene they have in this church. All the seats are full, all the aisles are full of chairs, and there's no room. It's completely full. This was on a Sunday night. So I asked the pastor a little bit about it, and he said, this is a pastor here and his family for that church, and I said, it's full in here. And he said, yeah, well, this is the Sunday night crowd. So I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, tomorrow night's Monday night, we'll have a whole different crowd. And Tuesday night, we'll have a whole different crowd. And Thursday night, we'll have a whole different crowd. And Friday night, we'll have a whole different crowd. And Saturday afternoon, we have a whole different crowd. Because it's the biggest, that's the only church, that's their church. So that's as big as they can get people in. So I said, you're one pastor, and you're telling me that you're having six different services a week. I said, how many families are you ministering to? He said, about 500. When I got up in front of the church, I asked them, how many of you here were raised in a Christian home? I got two hands. All the rest of them were born and raised Muslim. And the people are just turning to Christ. They don't know. This is in Lebanon. All these are refugees from Syria. And just the stories, we could go on and on and on about the stories these people told of how they came to Christ and what happened when they came to Christ, and how, like in this family here, the lady got saved. And the man wanted to kill her. That's his job, to kill. If somebody gets born again, you kill him. Well, then he went and talked to the preacher, was going to kill the preacher first, and he got saved. So then the oldest son was going to kill him. But he went to kill the preacher first, and the preacher got a hold of him, and he got saved. And the whole family ended up being saved, and they sent some of their relatives from Syria over into Lebanon to kill the whole family. But when the uncle got over there, he got saved too. Kind of a losing proposition. Anyway, after all that there in Beirut, we went out to a hotel that's up on the top of a hill looking out over the Mediterranean Sea. And because there's a holy site up there, it's guarded by soldiers all the time. There's soldiers around there, so it made the hotel a safe place. And we brought a busload of these guys from Syria. This is just some of the stuff I would copy and paste the Arabic Bible verses in some of my presentations. This is one of the groups of guys that came over from Syria, and they were there for 4 days. And for 4 days, nobody shot at them. For 4 days, they could have all they wanted to eat. And for 4 days, they could fellowship openly with each other. They're not from the same cities or the same areas. And it's about the only time that they're allowed to be together is when somebody pays for them to come out of the country and sit in a hotel and be safe. We're sitting around the circle there one day, and they pointed at one of the guys and they said, 60 hours ago, that guy was laying face down in the concrete with his hands tied behind his back and an AK-47 to his head. And he just kind of nods. Yeah, that's the way it is. And then they started making jokes about it. And I'm like, this isn't even 3 days ago. And you're sitting here making jokes about it? And the interpreter said, that's just They do that to relieve tension. He said most of these guys in this room have been kidnapped or shot at some point in time. Underneath their hair, a bullet mark through their scalp where a bullet missed them. A couple of the guys there were deaf in one ear, either from an explosion, or one guy was running and a sniper was shooting at him and the bullet hit the wall on the other side and exploded and it deafed him in one ear. The stories that are there are just absolutely unbelievable. One of the guys, they call him the driver. I said, why do you call him a driver? They said, because he drives crazy. Why is he driving crazy? Well, somebody from another village asked him to come down the village to talk to him about Jesus. And there's no Christian church there. And the road in between the villages is controlled by militia, rebel militia. So he gets in the car and his wife prays for him. Now think about going to church like this on Sunday morning. He gets in the car and his wife prays for him and he goes out there and gets in the car and he lays the hammer down, just drives as fast as that old jalopy will go. And he said, I can hear the rifle shots and I can smell the gunpowder.
But nobody hit me.
He got to where he was going. He goes into the house. He starts talking to these people about Jesus. And the end of that scene, the entire house, all the way down to the children, were down on their knees weeping and got born again. And it's not a joke there. You convert from Islam to Christianity, that's a death sentence. So he says, I'll come back and talk to you next week. They prayed for him. He got back in his car and drove home. One of the guys that was sitting there asked him, how many times did you do that last year? And he said, every week. And to them, it's a way they live. Their life is on the edge all the time. 2 weeks ago, one of the guys got beaten almost beyond recognition. And he was down on the ground. They had his hands tied behind his back. He was down on the ground on his knees. And the firing squad had lined up to shoot at him. And a truck came by. For some reason, the guys got into a discussion with the people in the truck. And they got all distracted. He got up and ran away. One of these guys. I got a question for you. What stands between you and that kind of Christianity? What stands today between me and that kind of an absolute, sold out, completely? Do you understand what I mean? I mean, I start finding out a little bit about these guys and they want me to talk to them. What are you going to tell them? Somebody that hazards their life like that for the gospel, what are you going to tell them? If they told you they want you to come and talk to them, what did you tell them? I stood there and cried. I said, well, how about if you talk to me? How about if you teach me? There's so many stories here in this picture. This man here was a millionaire. He had a couple of factories. He lost everything he owned. It's all gone. But he says, I still have my wife and my two sons. back here, this fellow standing in the back is a mathematical genius. He was teaching advanced math in college at 20 years old. And he told me, I think I'm going to quit my job. And I said, why so? You're one of the few people left in the country that actually has a job. And he said, because we go out in the afternoon and we sit in the park and young people come by and they sit down and we start talking to them. And we just go down the row one after another and we lead them to Jesus Christ. And he said, I can't have a job and do this at the same time. And if right now is when people are going to turn to Christ, then that's what we're going to do. And you know, over and over, I asked through an interpreter. Some of them had English, like the mathematician. Some of those guys could talk in English. But over and over, I'd ask him, what do you want? What do you want from us? What do you want from the church in the West? And their answer is always the same. We want to know that the Christians in the West have not forgotten us. As I said, there are people turning to the Lord in such great numbers right now in the country of Syria. that they've got places where they have 200 and 300 families getting together, and there is not one person among them who has been a Christian for more than a year. Like, there's not... Can you imagine that? And they're saying, just pray. And when they have a prayer meeting, it'll wreck your world. Because God comes down. Giants. And in the middle of all that war-torn thing, some of the most beautiful restaurants you've ever seen. It's just... These are some of the guys that went over with us. I think at least somebody here ought to recognize who that is. Irvin Barkman, this was a man here that took us over there. His name is, they just call him John of Syria. This is in action in Egypt along the Nile River. And of course, if you're there, you have to go ride Charlie Brown and see the pyramids and all that stuff. Sitting there talking with them about what they want, and they're just saying, we want people to pray for us. I'm going to close with a story out of India, Assam, India, where there was, back in about the middle of the 1800s, a man who heard about Jesus, and he walked many miles to find a missionary who would tell him about Jesus Christ. The missionary told him about Jesus, and he believed, and something changed inside. And he went back to his house where he was from, and he sat down and told his wife about Jesus Christ. And she believed, and something changed inside of her. And they were talking to their boys. They had two young boys. They talked to these boys about Jesus. And they began to talk to their neighbors about Jesus. And all over the place, people are hearing about Jesus. And the village chief became very animated and very angry. And he got the whole village together. And he told this man, he had this man come out there, standing there with his wife and his two little boys. And he said, today you are going to renounce Jesus. And the man said, no, I have decided to follow Jesus. And the chief turned to his soldiers and said, shoot the boys through with darts. And the soldiers shot their arrows through the boys, and he watched as his two sons fell to the ground and were bleeding out in front of him. And the chief said, now you will renounce Jesus. And he said, if none go with me, still I will follow. The chief said, kill his wife. And they took their spears and threw them through his wife. And she too lay on the sand in front of him, bleeding out. And the chief said, now you will renounce Jesus. And the man fell to his knees and said, the cross before me, world behind me. And they killed him that day. If you were to go to that province today in India, you would find it one of the strongest Christian areas in the whole country. Because after the man and his family died, the chief turned to Christ. And many people in the village and many people in the whole area. And someone heard the story and they wrote a song called, I Have Decided. You've sang that song a lot of times. It's sung all over the world in many different languages. Now you know the story behind it. And I would like if we could just end this part of the service with people standing together and we could just sing. We stand together. I have decided.